Welcome to the Big Fellas Podcast, where we chop it up about all things past, present, and future about the game of basketball. Where facts, stats, and context reign supreme.
That is blasphemous!
Sometimes it gets crazy, but we always keep it real.
Always keep it real.
Get ready to learn from players, coaches, and fans from all levels of the game and see the court in a brand new way. And now, fresh off the sidelines, here's your host, John Hartofilis.
What it do, fellas, and welcome to the Big Fellas Basketball Podcast. I'm your host, JH, coming to you from New York City, the mecca of basketball. Today, I'm excited to be joined by Isaiah Fox, former NBA and G League assistant coach. In this episode, we spoke about how Coach Fox transitioned from a successful pro playing career to the coaching ranks, some of his fondest memories in the G League, and the lessons he's learned along the way. We've got a good one in store for you today, fellas. Episode number 34, Isaiah Fox, professional basketball coach. Hey, Coach Fox, what's going on?
Life is good, man. How you doing, John?
Life's going great for me, too. I'm really excited to have you on. It's going to be a fun time.
Yeah, man. I'm excited for you guys having me. Like I said, I've been listening to the podcast now for the last couple of weeks, seeing all the guests you had, and I'm ready to go, man.
Appreciate it so much, and obviously can't wait for this one too. And just to start, we always start off every show asking this just to kind of see just where your beginnings were. How did you first get introduced to the game of basketball?
Man, just from a really early age, I, like most kids, probably played all the sports, soccer, little league baseball, little basketball and football here and there. And I was always kind of a bigger kid. So whenever we play these sports like soccer, I'd be the goalie, you know, football, I'd be on the line. So on and so forth. But when I started playing basketball, I just gravitated to it because there was so much, you know, everyone had a chance to control the ball a little bit. Everyone had a chance to be playmakers and scorers and screeners. And there was so many components to it. I thought all the moving parts were just great. So I just fell in love with it right away. My sister was playing high school ball, and I was able to get into the gym a lot, my older sister. So I just really gravitated toward it and always loved it, man. It's at a young age. I couldn't even tell you the age, man. I really couldn't. I think I really directed everything towards it as early as like the fourth or third grade. That's when I probably stopped playing the other sports during the season and really just focused on basketball. And then in California with AAU basketball, I mean, since fourth grade, it's year-round basketball, you know.
You touched on a little bit with maybe your sister, also other coaches in terms of the mentors that you've had throughout this journey. Who are some other ones maybe that really helped you kind of find your passion in the game?
Well, I mean, I played for a Hall of Fame coach in college. My high school coach, that's Lute Olson. My high school coach, Daryl Roper, is well known in the LA area. But there's a lot of guys who are just nameless who helped me along the way. There was a gentleman by the name of Edmund Harris, who one of my first AAU teammates, his father, who was just watching me play at like a high school, and he got me connected with an AAU program. There's a gentleman by the name of Thaddeus McGrew, who was my first AAU coach, who I live in a town called Monrovia, California. It's outside of the city. So, you know, we had to drive in an hour and a half sometimes with traffic to get to practices. And he really set that up logistically and motivated myself and my parents to stay committed to his AAU program. And then I remember this coach that I don't even remember his name, but at a young age, he would come to the park and basically kick my butt playing one-on-one. So, you know, a bunch of guys, I mean, guys like that who just kind of helped me out throughout the way, who didn't really have a stake in the game, but got me to where I was at just by keeping me focused and trying to help me improve, you know?
Of course. And you definitely need someone to kick your butt every once in a while and get you to that next level. That's great. You were playing, had a great career, met a lot of awesome people, whether it's with a Hall of Fame coach or obviously, of course, I'd imagine all your teammates. What kind of got you into the coaching industry?
Man, you know, it was just such a passion for it. When I was done playing, you know, pro ball overseas, I was trying to figure out my next step. And I had a good buddy named Lamar Hurd who played ball for Oregon State. I think he does the broadcast now for the Blazers. And he had a just like a youth camp he was starting to put together in Oregon. And throughout playing ball in college and in the pros, you know, you do a lot of coaches clinics and, you know, you talk to kids a lot about the game. So, yeah, right when I got done finishing, he had this kids camp that was going, kind of weekend deals. He had clinics and whatnot, and I kind of hopped on board really quick. He played ball at Oregon State, so we had a good friendship and we knew each other. So I started doing that, and I also was doing kind of desk work at a little 9-to-5 job, and I just realized that no matter what the pay was or what I was doing, that I would have to be around basketball in some capacity and coaching and teaching the game to kids was a real big passion of mine. It really, really made me feel good. And I kind of just slowly moved up. I started coaching kids, moved to high school kids, then high level AAU ball. I was a sports director at a YMCA where I was organizing a lot of youth basketball from fifth grade up to the high school kids. And then I coached at a junior college. And the year I coached at the junior college, I volunteered for the LA Defenders, the G League team for the Lakers, for their training camp and kind of a couple of weeks after that. And then next thing you know, college teammate, roommate got the job for the LA Lakers, Luke Walton, and went through an interview process for their G League team and got a job working for Kobe Carl and what is now the South Bay Lakers. So it was a gradual kind of yearly process of building up and continue to focus, but the commitment level to it was unquestionable. I mean, you know, I just got such a passion for it, and it really makes me feel like I'm doing what I'm supposed to do whenever I'm teaching the game, no matter whether that's kids or professional basketball players.
Of course, and it's so interesting to hear about that because not just guests I've had on the show, but just people I talk to every day, I've heard some people talk about how they just felt that itch to get back into the coaching game. And they just knew that, okay, that's what my passion is. I could, you know, put all my energy and all my love into that. And that's what they end up doing, and they're happy with it. And it's great that you're able to do that too, which is awesome. And then obviously, I mean, getting a job with South Bay Lakers and then eventually the Lakers was an amazing opportunity. One player that stood out to me a lot was Andre Ingram, because I mean, that must've been around the time that were you on the staff? Like, cause that was like, right. Kind of like dates were matching up with when he had that outburst against the Rockets.
Yeah, man. I mean, that was an amazing story, and something that's interesting about a lot of G League teams and about that specific story is we were in a playoff push. We had a great team. Alex Caruso, Thomas Bryant, Zubac came down and played with us. We had some guys. I mean, God, we just had an all around good team. Scotty Machado, who plays in Australia right now, Michael Holyfield, who's in the Asian market right now. So we are on this great playoff push, and we lose in the Western Conference Finals to the Austin Toros when they won the G League championship. But just the timing and logistically of that loss, it enabled Andre to be perfectly called up the next day to that game against Houston. And it's just the highs and lows and the bittersweetness of that. You know, on one hand, it's like you want to win as a coach, but on the second hand, if we win that game, that experience doesn't happen for Andre, for his family. It doesn't happen for us selfishly getting to see that. And, you know, it's like if you went back in time, what, would you want to win that game or would you want Andre to have that experience? So, I mean, that night was amazing. We knew as a coaching staff that he was going to get playing time. And we obviously had the faith in him that if he got his shot, he was going to take it and make a couple, but we had no idea he was going to explode like that. That was such an amazing experience.
The next day on Instagram, there's so many highlight tips of it. And that comeback story is something that's always going to resonate with me and obviously many other people. So hearing about that,
it's not just a comeback story. You know, it's a story of a guy sticking with it, you know, not giving up, experiencing the highs and lows and all of that, and just maintaining his poise and his dedication level. I mean, it's a wonderful example for a lot of people.
And it's so interesting to think about what you said, because I didn't know that the timing worked that way, where one day you guys were playing in the Western Conference Finals, and then the next day he's having that explosion. I didn't know about that timing overlap. So that's super interesting then, especially.
Yeah, man, it's an interesting thing how some of that works. You know, G League playoffs kind of start toward the end of the regular season for the NBA, or at least it did. And yeah, if we would have won that game, I mean, I'm sure it would have been an option, and I'm sure we would have told Andre to go up to the Lakers, but it was just, you know, it was a no-brainer at that moment. And it worked out the way it did. So kudos to him and the organization and how that all played out. That was great to be a part of.
The rest of that season too, whether, I mean, Alex Caruso, all those guys, and that's obviously must've been a really fun team to be around and to help coach. And then the following year with the Lakers it was a little more rocky with injuries and all that, but still, I mean, being able to coach LeBron James must have been an incredible experience in and of itself, even though this season didn't go the way everyone had planned, right? The way this past one went, very two different things.
Yeah, I mean, just being around that is amazing. I mean, for where I was at in my coaching, I don't know if I was exactly coaching LeBron or just kind of rebounding for him and putting him through workouts, but being around those guys, the season did not go the way we wanted it to, obviously. But the experience in itself, always learning from it, it taught me a lot, especially about guys at that level. You know, I was kind of super energy kind of coach, using my voice, encouraging people. And we're in a drill, and LeBron's on the gold team. They're playing defense, and I'm clapping him up. I'm like, all right, guys, one more stop. And this is kind of early in training camp. And he kind of looked over and he's like, oh man, we don't need no gas right now. So it kind of taught me a lesson about how to channel my energy, how to channel my encouragement, how that NBA season, it's, you know, it's a marathon and it flows. And just how to communicate to players like him, high level IQ players, Rondo. I mean, you can learn so much from those guys, just as much as you learn from coaches, mentors that you have.
Considering how you always think that, like, more energy, the more energy, the better. It's always like you want more and more and more of it. And it's kind of crazy to think about how, like, at some point you have to know that obviously everything in moderation, but sometimes it's time to hit the brakes a little bit. I'm always super, I mean, you can already tell I'm already hyped up on energy all the time. I have to go back sometimes and put the clips to like 90% speed. 85% speed, because I'm going too fast and I'm too excited. But yeah, it's important. I mean, if anyone knows, it's me, that sometimes you gotta hit the brakes a little bit.
right. That's all good, man. You gotta be yourself, right? I mean, you know, it taught me a good lesson how to adapt in that context, but you gotta be yourself. And at the end of the day, that's what these guys want to see from you. I mean, they're observing everything. The NBA athlete is an amazing athlete.
I'm going from coast to coast, going from the Lakers all the way to the Sixers. How did that whole thing go down? And then, like, what was that experience like for you?
Yeah, I mean, it was a great experience. The experience of going from West Coast to East Coast in and of itself is interesting. Philadelphia is a great city. And I learned a lot from Brett Brown. I mean, I think there's a difference between West Coast and East Coast basketball. There definitely was a difference in the way Coach Walton prepared, Coach Kobe Carl prepared, and the way Brett Brown and Connor Johnson, the head coach of the Delaware Bluecoats, there's definitely a difference. And the 76er organization took a lot of pride in keeping a lot of stuff in-house, which was difficult for the Lakers, given all the media attention when LeBron came. And Coach Brown specifically, maybe from that Spurs kind of branch, he was a really, like, detailed coach. He had something called a 76-tionary. He had names and labels for just about everything. The prep work was different in the development program. And even their analytics department was interesting, because they had, like, in-house, which most teams do, but they had a different formula for a lot of things. And I learned so much from it. It was great. You know, once you're in the middle of the season and training camp starts, though, you are locked in. I mean, you're going home to the gym, to the airport, to practice, you know. So once everything gets locked in, being in D.C. versus being in Portland, I don't think it makes too much of a difference, right, once everything gets going. But the part of learning and learning from all the different coaches, that's something that I really, really enjoyed and something I was very, very grateful for.
Was that your first time going over to the East Coast? Had you been on the West Coast your whole life?
No, I mean, I played ball in college and we ventured east a lot. But in terms of actually living out there, yeah, that was my first time. I'm trying to remember the places I live. But I mean, I lived in Japan for a year playing ball, Mexico for 6 months playing ball. I lived in China for 3 or 4 months playing ball, Australia for like a year. So I was kind of used to it, but the traveling aspect of it. But, you know, the December in Delaware is a little different from December in L.A., that's for sure. But it's all good, man. It's all basketball when it gets down to it.
Yep. It's so interesting to hear about how different it is in all these other countries. But at the end of the day, the objective is still the same. It's still basketball. It's a lot of those things kind of carry over, which is
right.
But it's just the nuances are always interesting to think about. And then you also mentioned the 76-tionary. Am I getting that right?
The 76-tionary. Brett was very, very proud of this document that could not be outside of the building, but it was a great thing. It's a great learning tool for coaches. I mean, like I said, it did not leave the building, and it was kind of like a thing that was on film more so than a book. But yeah, I mean, he has labels for parts of the court, which I'm sure a lot of coaches do. And when a play develops, he has labels for the guy who's going to get the ball on the first side and the second side of the action. So yeah, it was called his 76-tionary, and I definitely needed it the first couple of weeks to kind of cram in the way they spoke their game, you know. It was a cram session for sure. They use a lot of different terminology. You know, everyone has their different terminology, and they took a lot of pride in the labeling of their terminology, so it was cool.
Of course, that's super cool because you always hear about all these Maury Ball, stuff like that. That's 76-tionary isn't something I've really heard about. So it's always interesting to hear about how some coaches put their own unique spin on things.
Right, right. Yeah, man, you got to learn from it. I think in this game, a lot of people are mimics. A lot of teams run the same stuff and do a lot of the same actions, obviously. And I think for myself, as I'm kind of going through this and learning each year, you kind of take what you like from each person and use it the way you want to use it when it's time. Now, as an assistant coach, you definitely want to immerse yourself in what their terminology is so you can be on the same accord. But as you're personally developing as a coach, you know, you want to make sure that when you see something great, that you try to adapt it into your own personal philosophies and whatnot.
I mean, for sure. I mean, you definitely want to be able to adapt to all those different things. And you've obviously had so many experiences to take little bits and pieces from that, you know, you might not have had those same experiences. Obviously you didn't know those same lessons at the beginning. What's some advice that you'd give to a 20-year-old Coach Fox, maybe that isn't sure if he's going to go into coaching, doesn't really know what's next for him? What advice would you kind of give him?
Well, I mean, first you want to be sure with the path you're taking, all right? Like, I knew I wanted to be around basketball, and then I knew I wanted to coach. And then once I knew I wanted to coach, Andre Ingram, man, you stick with it. You experience rejection. You put yourself out there. You try to learn each year, and you kind of humbly keep going toward what your goal is. And you definitely are going to get knocked along the way. But as you keep going, you end up gaining this experience. Your RV, your resilience value goes up, and you work a little harder. So I think for someone who's 20, who maybe not doesn't know the exact direction, maybe they want management or maybe they want to coach, I think it's kind of the first aspect is really trying to figure out what exact path you want to go down. And I mean, I heard your podcast with Tommy Shepard. I think he said his first NBA job was in Denver in PR.
Yep.
Right, and that was his foot in the door, but he obviously had a goal where he wanted to be more in management and team build and stuff. So Keep going, man. Keep striving and one step at a time, just keep moving forward. You know, that's all you can do.
No, for sure. And it's funny how when you're trying to find the word to describe what you want to say, you just said Andre Ingram. That's it. That's persistence. That's what it all boils down to. It's great.
Absolutely, dude. Absolutely. You got to keep moving forward and take the hits and learn from the hits, right? That's the only way you're going to get better. And you get stronger from it. You become a better coach. You become a better person or a better manager or whatever aspect you're trying to get into. Better podcaster. How many people did you reach out to before you start landing interviews with all these guys, right?
The number of LinkedIn messages that I've sent out are unbelievable. You wouldn't believe it.
Right.
Yeah. Hundreds. I've been sending out connections, and then I take them back, make a bookmark folder of all the ones I've taken back so I can revisit it when LinkedIn allows me to. It's a little psychotic, but it gets the job done sometimes. So,
dude, it gets the job done, and look at what you're learning, right? I mean, I think I heard you want to be a GM one day. So, you know, seeing these messages on LinkedIn and then bookmarking and this, that, and the other, it's great for what you're doing now, but it's also going to be great for when you become a GM. You're going to be doing crazy stuff like that all the time, I'm sure, you know?
Yep, definitely got to get a little crazy, psychopath, whatever you want to call it. Definitely have to start doing that from now, because no one that gets to the highest level is normal. That just wouldn't make sense.
Absolutely, man.
Yeah.
It's an interesting time right now. There's rumors going around that the G League will announce something soon. I think most people around the G League are really positive. I obviously want to coach in the NBA. I had a couple conversations with a couple teams. A little bit of traction. It's kind of hard to say where teams are at, but hopefully with all the announcements in terms of the start of the season and the schedule and all that, I'm hoping something happens soon. But again, dude, it's about continuing to put yourself out there, work on yourself, making sure you're you know, doing your homework. Everything's great online. You can view so many coaches' clinics, and you can still learn. And keep in contact with your network, you know. You're going to get, like we talked about earlier, you know, I've heard no from a couple people. I heard maybe. So we'll see what happens. Hopefully, fingers crossed here in the next couple of weeks. I'm sure something positive will happen. Just got to keep it going, dude. I mean, even if it doesn't, I'll be coaching somewhere, and then I'll go for it again the following season. We'll see what happens. This Corona thing sucks. A lot of out-of-work coaches right now. And guys all around the facets of basketball. So everyone's happy that the NBA is coming back. I think they did a great job in the bubble. I know I enjoyed it so much being home, watching it with my family. And yeah, the new season starts soon, so we'll see.
I love that answer, because I love how you first brought up how no matter what happens, the pandemic can't take away the ability to learn from you. There's still all these clinics. There's still all these things you can go and learn more. Maybe everyone's in the dark about the start time of next season or all these things that are out of our control. But the one thing that is in your control is that you can still get better. It's something that everyone needs to think about, is that no matter what happens, you can always still get better. You might have the chance to show it. That might be taken away from you, or it might be postponed or whatever it might be. But you can always get better.
Absolutely. And, you know, I am attached to the game. This is what I want to do in my life. There's no second guess about that. And as I have this time off, you know, I'm still working with players, working with a couple G League guys, working with a couple pros. So, like I said, I'm just trying to maintain and do what I do. So as soon as a team does call, it's the same routine for me. I'm waking up, getting my workout in, going to work out a player, doing any homework I can do online to get better for myself, and good things will happen.
That's great. No matter who calls, the routine, the preparation is exactly the same. Awesome.
Absolutely.
Love it. Coach Fox, thank you so much for coming on. This was a great conversation, and I learned there were so many little tiny lessons that I'm going to take with me and use. So thank you so much for this.
Dude, I appreciate you having me on.
Thanks for listening to the Big Fellas Podcast. Check us out on all major social media platforms at Big Fellas Pod to join the chop up. You can also listen to us on every podcast platform on the planet. Stay tuned for the next episode, Big Fellas.